Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance. Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
And welcome to the center of the poker world right now. St. Louis hosting its first ever World Series of Poker Circuit event. Hi, I'm Paul Harrah, sitting aside Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips. We'll introduce you to Tournament Director Jimmy Sommerfeld in just a moment. Later on, a touring circuit pro by the name of Doug Carley, who gave up life as a stockbroker to become a millionaire poker player the hard way. And another millionaire poker player will join us later on as well, Jennifer Harmon, who's got a couple of bracelets to her name and plays in the biggest cash game in the world on a regular basis at Bobby's Room at the Bellagio. All of that ahead. First, Dennis, how you doing in your World Series of Poker circuit debut in St. Louis the last couple of days?
Well, I've made some new friends. Haven't made any money. No, it's actually been fun. Met a lot of people. It's kind of a homecoming almost here.
Yeah.
A lot of the people that you run into occasionally seem to all be here. Mm-hmm. Everybody's come out to play these games. So I think we had almost 700 the first event out here.
675 in event one on Friday.
It's awesome in that. And like I said, I go from table to table to table. And guys that I recognize, guys that I've played with for the last 3, 4, 5 years, it's pretty awesome. I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
It's terrific. I played both event one, in which I didn't do anything, and then event two. A $560 buy-in event with 288 people in it. And I'm proud to say I made my first ever big final table.
You did very, very well. I was watching you on it, and I thought you actually played excellent.
Thank you.
I really did.
Ended up coming in fifth, which was terrific. You know, 15th in Biloxi in January, 14th in Tunica in January, mm-hmm. fifth in St. Louis in April. There seems to be a progression here that, well, I better not peek before the series, I guess.
Well, you're not supposed to get pocket tens when there's only five people left and run into aces.
Yeah.
It doesn't bode well.
Well, what happened? I mean, people keep asking me, what happened? They want to hear a bad beat story
at the end.
Yeah. And here's the bad beat. The guy on the button had aces. He raised. I had tens in the small blind. He raised essentially a quarter of my stack.
Yeah.
Any poker player in the world is going to put in the rest of their money right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, I turn over my tens. He's got aces, and I don't get a 10. So
yeah. You're behind in only four hands. You're racing with a couple of others. Boom. You got to push it in.
And by the way, congratulations to Raymond Glantz from Illinois, who won that event. And a couple of locals who've been doing pretty well here. Kyle Kleckner took down the first event on Thursday night. Our friend Alan Shermer picked up a nice prize for taking down the PLO event over the weekend as well. And other St. Louisans doing very, very well, as well as some out-of-towners, which is one of the great things about this event. We do have people coming from all over the country, particularly all over the Midwest. A lot of them who follow the World Series of Poker Circuit, and we're happy to have them here in St. Louis. We're also very happy to have our first guest with us, Jimmy Sommerfeld, who is tournament director for the World Series of Poker Circuit events. He and his company, Poker Tournament Consultants, kind of provide the structure and all the rest. And Jimmy, welcome to the final table.
Thank you for having me on the show.
It's nice to have you here. Am I right in that you bring everything in when you're doing an event like this?
Basically, we bring in all the staff, all the dealers. We bring in the rules, the regulations, a lot of regulations here in Missouri. We made it through it.
Yep.
And we try to put on a pretty good show, and we move from town to town, state to state, country to country, putting on the shows.
Well, you do put on a good, you don't try to, you do put on a very good show here.
Yeah.
But the logistics of this has to be a nightmare. Everyone's got to be different. You never know, especially coming to a first-time event in a city, how many people do you bring? The first time has to be just a bit of a hair puller.
Right, it is, because when we come in here to try to plan it, there are slot machines everywhere, and they actually move out all the slot machines, and we have to visualize where we're going to put the tables and how many dealers we're going to need. You know, we're really going into the unknown, but they pulled it off, and I think the staff's done a very good job.
How soon do you start planning this? I mean, have you been here off and on for the last 2 or 3 months or something?
We actually started planning on this one right after the World Series last year, about 9 months out.
Wow.
And then we really get to advertise it and things about 3 months out.
One of the things that I love about this, and I told you this in Tunica, and the same is true here, is the structure you had. Like I said, the $560 buy-in event that I played Saturday and fortunately made it to the second day on Sunday was a blind structure that starts out, you get 8,000 in chips. You start out with 25 blinds, and then you make it go 25-50, and then 50-75, and then 50-100, and then 75-150. You gave us plenty of levels of play, so many, in fact, that one of the dealers said, I've never dealt any tournament with a 50-75 level. Was that your invention?
Actually, it was. What happened was everybody's complaining about the blind structure, so I tried to take what they were saying and give them more blind structures. I had to reduce the time a little bit or we'd be playing for weeks. But I tried to make it where you really didn't notice the blinds were moving up.
Yeah.
You know, we want the skill to knock the players out instead of letting the blinds knock the players out.
It's great because it turns into a deep stack event. I mean, you only have 30-minute rounds, but with the blinds going up so slowly, you're right. You don't notice it, and you're a few hours in before anybody really has to start turning it into a shove fest because they're short stacked.
So maybe that's why you're doing better is because, you know, your skill levels now, you have time to play.
Well, I like to tell people that that's why I'm doing better, Jimmy, yes. But as a cash game player who plays fairly deep stacked, you know, this is more beneficial to players like me.
Right, correct.
Yeah.
You know, we've already dispersed over $750,000 in prize money.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of events left.
Yeah. Well, you've barely started it.
Right.
I mean, yeah. You know, we're just getting going.
Got a full week to go before the main event goes on. This weekend there'll be a $1,000 buy-in and a $1,500 buy-in. And then on Tuesday the 13th, the big one, the $5,000 buy-in. And we'll have a lot of pros coming into play in that as well. I do have to ask you about one controversial hand because I was at the table when it happened, and I know you know the hand I'm talking about here. There was a guy who was in late position who raised, and it came around to the big blind, and the big blind was fairly short stacked, and he said, I'm all in. And it came back around to the guy who had been the original raiser, and he said, I call, and the guy behind him who had called the original raise then said, I fold. The dealer thought that both guys had folded. He thought the original raiser hadn't called but had folded as he turned over his nines. The other guy, meanwhile, the re-raiser, turns over a pair of tens, but the dealer, not knowing the bet had been called, pulled in the cards, turned them over, dropped the stub, the rest of the deck, onto the table, and pushed all the cards together and started pushing the chips towards the guy with the tens. Meanwhile, everybody at the table goes, whoa, hold on a second. We all heard him say, I call. The dealer was the only one who didn't. So the dealer calls the floor guy. The floor guy calls the supervisor. And within about 90 seconds, Jimmy shows up. And I know from my experience that when you get Jimmy at the table, something major is going down. So you take the story from there because you had to make a pretty big decision here with a lot of chips at stake.
Right. When we go to a table, you know, no decision can be easy. You know, we have to, because they're the players' tournament life, you know, they pay money to get into these tournaments. And your decision can basically knock those out of the tournament. So we have to make the best decision we can. And in this situation, nobody has any cards. You know, the players at the table saw that one player had 10s and one player had 9s. So that's easy to recreate the 10s and 9s. The problem comes in is that nobody knew what suits they had. So my first decision, and I was talking it over, is that I was going to give the 10s the same exact suits as the 9s. Because I didn't really want the 9s to have a free roll on the 10s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the 10s have the 9s dominated, and I wanted to keep it that way to try to put the integrity back into the hand.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, the one that had 9s didn't like that decision because he said, well, maybe I had a different suit.
Yep.
You know, so now I have to decide, you know, do I actually go into the muck and try to find the cards? I hate doing this, but in this situation where everybody at the table saw it was 10s and 9s, I was going to go into where the pile of cards were and see if two 10s were together and two 9s were together.
Mm-hmm.
To try to put the hands back the way they were.
You're trying to maintain the integrity of the hand.
Correct. And all in situation, the hands have to be turned up. And the players did nothing wrong. Basically, the dealer didn't hear the communication between the players and himself and mucked the hands. The players actually did nothing wrong, so now I'm going to have to try to reconstruct the hands. And luckily, the two 10s were sticking together and the two 9s were sticking together. They hadn't been separated, and so we played the hand on out with the two 10s and the two 9s.
And then the dealer shuffled up to do the rest of the stub. And
right. And you wouldn't believe what happened.
The 10s held up.
The 10s held up.
I mean, that's a severe bad beat story if the guy catches a 9. And what one of the other players mentioned to me later was all of the cards from all of the players were in there, and one of the players who had mucked early, who had folded his hand early, he had a 9. Which meant that the guy with the pair of 9s should have only had one out, but because all the cards were together, he actually had two outs in the deck, but fortunately nothing happened.
Right.
And justice prevailed, as they like to say.
Justice prevailed. Same thing happened at the World Series, and four people were all in, and basically the same situation had happened, except one player had fives, one player had queens, kings, and aces all in the same hand. The same thing happened.
Wow.
And it was actually the fives hand that got mucked, and the other players at the table said, well, you know, he had fives, give him back two fives. So we found the fives, and we gave him back, and it ended up the fives ended up winning the hand.
Oh, man. Oh, that's nasty.
Man. Yeah.
Nasty.
So after you're finished here in St. Louis, another 10 days or so, do you move on immediately to another event, or do you keep on moving from place to place?
Right. Actually, 3 days from after we get it through, we will go to the IP Biloxi and do a WSOP satellite event there. And then they will also, right after that, we don't do it, but they have the New Orleans Circuit event.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's first week of May or something
right,
like that.
And then we go right to the World Series of Poker, which is going to be really fun. And then right after that, we're going to have our first ever poker cruise from our company. So
wow.
You know, we're going to be pretty busy.
You are pretty busy.
Yeah.
Well, you run a terrific tournament. You know, I know you got a good staff here at Harrah's St. Louis helping you out, but all the people you brought in, all the dealers and all of your executives who work with you and make this thing work, make it a real pleasure for the players. I mean, it's an enjoyable and fair and fun experience, and I think you're predominantly responsible for that.
Thank you.
I do have one question. I wonder what kind of a follow-up you do afterwards, especially in a brand-new event here. I mean, do you have a couple of weeks later maybe a little quick get-together? And what went right, what went wrong, how can we improve, what changes to be made, that type of thing?
Sure, I would be glad to.
All right. Well, I was just thinking maybe we get some feedback from the players. We're going to be playing the main event.
Yep.
See if we can get something like that together. Maybe we can send you a short note or something like that on it.
That'd be great.
I guarantee 90% of it's going to be complimentary from what we've seen so far.
Right.
But you never know. Maybe we can twist something around or help a little bit.
All right, Jimmy's got to run. He's got an event today. He's only got three events every day to run. So we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, Jimmy.
Thank you.
Right,
take care, Jimmy.
Jimmy Sommerfeld,
yeah.
The World Series of Poker Tournament Director. Here at the final table with Paul Harrah's and Dennis Phillips. In a moment, touring circuit pro Doug Carley will join us. First, this portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net, the website where you can play against pros like Dennis Phillips.
Oh, it's unbelievable what you can have at PokerStars right now. You can go on there and qualify to go almost anywhere in the world. We've had places in Monte Carlo, in Australia, in Latin America. It's unbelievable. If you want to play poker, you want to travel the world, you can maybe get a free ride by going on. Go to PokerStars.net. It's a free roll to start with. Work your way up and see what happens. And coming up here in May, they have their Scoops, their annual spring World Championship of Poker.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, go to PokerStars.net, qualify for these tournaments, and there's some huge tournaments going on there. So I'll tell you, everything's happening at PokerStars.
Have they started qualifying for the World Series of Poker main event yet?
They have not. They will do that very shortly here, though. I think we're going to finish up the Monte Carlo qualifyings, and then, boom, and away we go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, last year, they qualified over 2,000 people for the World Series main event.
Yeah. So if you want to get in on any of that, this is
any
the place to play. And it's not just No Limit Hold'em that you can play on there.
Nope.
All sorts of games. That's the website to go to. Download the software and play PokerStars.net, where you'll find a whole bunch of Team PokerStars pros like Dennis. We'll be right back with more of The Final Table from Harrah's St. Louis, the home of this World Series of Poker circuit event on 590 of The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on TheChipLeader.com.
Whether you play in a home game or online or in the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis, this is the radio show for you. It's The Final Table with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And welcome back to the home of a World Series of Poker circuit event here at Harrah's St. Louis, the biggest poker tournament St. Louis has ever seen. 675 people played in the first big event on Friday. We've had several hundred in some of the other events since then. Another one going on right now, and they will continue next week. If you go to Harrah's website, which is harrahsstlouis.com, harrahsstlouis.com, you can find out about all the events that are going on, three a day. And as I mentioned before, the noon events are all No Limit Hold'em, but there are also some pot limit events. They've already had a stud event. There's a ladies event coming up this Sunday. There will be mega satellites to get you into the 5K main event that'll start next Tuesday, the 13th, and we'll have some special guests for that as well. Details again at the website, harrahsstlouis.com. And when you come here to Harrah's, pick up one of our brand new Final Table hats or shirts or win shirts or sweatshirts. We debuted them last Friday. They are right in the lobby. We've got a display there. They're on sale, and we're going to have them online as well starting this Thursday. Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, will be the place to go to order that stuff as well. I'm wearing both the hat and the sweatshirt right now. The sweatshirts are selling very well because poker rooms tend to be cold. Not just in terms of your cards sometimes, but in terms of actual temperature.
Yeah, we were working out a deal with the casino, evidently, to sell more sweatshirts.
I told them, crank up the AC. We got to sell some more shirts. Our next guest here at the final table is Doug Carley, a former stockbroker from Alliance, Ohio, who retired from that world because he didn't like gambling. Instead, he became a poker professional. He now lives on the tournament poker circuit, and that decision made him a poker millionaire the hard way. He's got over 100 caches on the circuit, including more than 40 at World Series of Poker circuit events like this. That is the most that anybody's ever gotten in history. He's got a couple of rings that he never wears, uses them instead as card protectors. And I'm happy to say in the two events that I played, I didn't have to play against either Dennis or Doug. Doug, welcome to the final table.
Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure having you here. Over 100 caches, and that's obviously not just World Series of Poker circuit events, but all sorts of events all over the place, right?
Right.
Congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. It probably just means I play too much, but...
Well, I see a couple of amazing things. You must be married to an amazing woman, too.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that.
I'm very fortunate. In fact, most of the top poker pros know Karen. They come running over. I think they're going to say hello to me. They just go and get their hug from Karen. And then they go, oh, hi, Doug.
Yeah.
You're here, too. Whatever.
When I first met Doug in January, we were introduced by our friend Eric Harkins from Image Masters, the company that photographs all of the players during these tournaments. And the first thing he did was say, I don't know if you know Doug Carley, but this is his wife, Karen. Before he even introduced me to Doug, he introduced me to Karen. So they do tour together. They are a great team. For people who wonder what your life would be like, who want to, maybe they're young and they think I want to go on the circuit, or maybe they're middle-aged guys like us who think I'm going to quit my job and play poker for a living. How is it as a life?
Well, we've got it really good. We are fortunate during the bubble, the tech bubble and things, I realized it was a bubble and got out. So we didn't have the pressures of a small bankroll to start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when most people ask, you know, should I do this and that, you know, I always tell them play as far below your bankroll as you possibly think you should, and then you might be playing low enough. Because, I mean, most people play way over their bankroll. And,
yeah.
You know, I play to the point, like, if I'm not running good, if I don't win a seat in the main event, I won't buy in.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, with that rate, you know, if I want to play in 30 years, I'll be playing in 30 years, you know, if I still enjoy it. But I met a fellow out the World Series, a good friend. He won a circuit event, a main event that I had final table, and we became good friends. And he was bemoaning because he just bubbled out at the 40K. And he says, you know, my bankroll started the World Series was only 70,000, and my first question was, why'd you play the 40K?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dennis said the same thing last year to a friend of ours who won a sit-and-go to get into the
40K. She did. 40K. She's one of only two people that qualified and won the seat at it. They handed her Lammers for it. She came over to me and says, boy, I really want to play this 40K. And I said, well, stop and think for a second. How many different tournaments can you play with those Lammers versus
$40,000
with the one tournament? Do you really want to sink it all and all of your bankroll into that one tournament or spread it out over 10, 12, 15 others?
Yeah.
She looked at me and went, ah, damn it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she could play in the 10K main event and a dozen other smaller events.
And keep half the money.
Right.
So, yeah, and that's what she did.
So bankroll management is obviously an important part of how you live your life.
And that's very good words of wisdom there, and people should listen to that. Do not play over your limit.
So when you come to a World Series of Poker circuit event like this one here at Harrah's St. Louis, how many events will you play?
Usually I come and play two or three or four before the main event. Last 6 months or so I've been running so bad, I've been coming early and you know to play the cheaper ones.
Mm-hmm.
And get a feel. But if I'm, you know, I seem to always run in streaks, you know. I was very fortunate when I first started. It was, I mean, I played part-time in 05, and I think I ended up, like, fourth in the world in final tables and 23rd in card players just playing. You know, I thought it was pretty easy. I'd played poker my whole life, and I realized, you know, I was running pretty good. And 05, 06, you know, nothing go wrong. And now last year and so far this year, I'm, You know, it's a Murphy's Law thing, so, you know, you got to play. And, you know, if you're not mentally tough, sometimes I always wonder why people love this game so much because, it's a tough grind.
It is, yeah.
And especially if you have the bankroll of pressures, it's got to be, you know, I mean, you can actually see the pressure on some people.
Yeah.
I almost always know who's close to going broke. Just you can see it in their face and their attitude, you know.
When they come to the table or as the tournament goes on?
Oh, you can almost see it right away.
Yeah.
I mean, like Dennis probably, you know, there's stories. There's so many very, very well-known players that are broke. It used to be an old saying, there's two type of professional poker players, those that are broke and those that are going broke. Now, fortunately, there's so much money in a business of poker that comes in, and it does help keep a lot more people alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. There's a bigger purses, everything like that. It's a great reward, but you still, the money management, I can't emphasize it enough. You've made some great points here on that. If you go in there and you're just basically risking it all on one roll of the dice, not a wise move.
Yeah.
There is no problem playing some of these smaller ones. I know some guys who come here and play satellites mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Never play any of the big tournaments. Right. They do well on a sit and go. They enjoy it. Hey, if that's what you're successful at, do it.
Doug, when you're on the circuit, do you run into a lot of aggressive young guns?
It can vary. I prefer those because that's my middle age strategy and my check call strategy. I just look pathetic and they just bet themselves broke. You know, I have no skills. I know what I'm good at, and I look pathetic, and they think they can run over me, so I use that.
All evidence to the contrary.
Yeah, 100 caches? Yeah, right.
But you know what? We have talked so often about table image, and yes. When I first met Doug, here is a middle-aged guy who kind of looks like us, who goes to the table, and you don't wear the rings. I'm guessing that's because two things. You don't like wearing rings, but also because it tells people at the table, oh, this guy's good, and you don't want to give off that image. But also, when you run into these young guys, when I made the final table this weekend, there was a guy who came to the table with three times the amount of chips I had. I was number two in chips. He had triple my chips and donked them off because he was way, way, way too aggressive. There was one hand where a guy with middle chips moved all in on a hand. He three-bet all in. And this kid called him with the big stack with king of diamonds, seven of hearts offsuit, pre-flop. When I saw that, I said, thank you, Tom Dwan. Because they all think they're Tom Dwan, don't they?
Yeah.
They don't have the skills. You must run into that all the time.
Yeah, when I get to a table, I go one of either way. If it's a tight table, I bring the rings out and try and bully a little bit. But that doesn't seem to it's hard for a middle-aged guy to bully. They just think they can still run over you.
Yeah.
But more often than not, I try to promote an even tighter image.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first couple levels, I'll throw my blind away so fast. Because I want them to think they can run me over. And then if you ever do catch some hands, or plus, I seem to do well against a lot of the top pros because any move doesn't go over their head.
Mm-hmm.
So when I need to make a check raise to stay alive later in the tournament and things, I can usually check raise pretty efficiently against the top pros because they realize I've been folding for a couple hours.
And yeah.
Well, again, that's the level of play. We've talked about that before. It's hard to make a move against a guy that doesn't know what a move is.
Right.
However, if you're actually playing against somebody that's watched, it's a senior table image, has seen the way you've been playing, your betting patterns, the whole bit, like a Dan Harrington can get away with a bluff very easily because people really do believe him. I mean, he doesn't do it that often.
Right.
If you pull the same type of an image, you know, you will get the table respect. And
right.
There's nothing wrong with that. Then you use it later on in the tournament to keep your chip stacks up until you can catch a couple of hands.
Right.
You know, since you both have more final table experience than I do, this was my first final table at a big event, you know, several hundred people in it. I was astounded that at no point in the 6 hours that I was sitting at that final table did I have a bluff opportunity. Because with short stacks in the seat to my left and the seat to his left, they were both ready. They had their hands on their chips ready to go at any time. You made a move on these guys, and they were ready to do that. Or, quite often, somebody else was making a move before me. Now, as we got shorter and shorter, that obviously changed. But people kind of come to that table when you have a lot of chips there. You normally would like to be able to use them and bluff and use every bullet in the gun that you possibly can. But I didn't have those opportunities. Have you found yourself in those situations, Doug?
Yeah. In fact, probably my biggest disappointment, because it was a high-profile final table at the World Series. It was a 5K, and Helmuth was there, Vinny Vinn, Isabel Mercier, Marcel Lewis. You know, it was high-profile. And I came in with an average stack, so I felt really comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Vinny Vinn had twice as many chips as anybody. He raised every single hand.
Mm-hmm.
And when Marcel Luska doubled up to get to about 400,000, Vinny had 800,000. Vinny raised 40,000. Marcel went all in for 400, whatever it was. Vinny beat him in the pot with ace jack offsuit.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized you couldn't play back at Vinny. So until he was gone, and I never picked up a hand, I did raise one hand where he actually got out.
Yep.
I didn't have anything, so that's the only hand I won at that final table. And my hands were tied. Finally, Vinny went out eighth, but by that time I was crippled. And the last hand before a break, I shoved on a small blind. He limped. This kid that ended up winning it, thinking I had, you know, some pretty good fold equity there, and he called me with queen high. Unfortunately, the queen high beat my jack high.
Dennis, have you run into that where you're playing at a table and you just, because of the way other people are playing, you essentially just got to play solid cards?
Oh, you have to at times, yeah. That's why it's so important to keep track of the chip counts that are in front of it. If you've got two or three people at this table that have less than 10 big blinds, they have one move and one move only.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to try and take advantage of their position. They're going to try and get the chips in when they think they've got at least a race on it.
Yep.
And you try to make any kind of a move, be ready, because the chips are going to go in there very easily.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's quite often that case. Be aware of the chip count of everybody else at that table. It makes such a huge difference.
Very, very important. Doug, give our listeners who are planning on coming here in the next week to play, and it might be their first big event that they've ever played in. They've played in smaller events. We've been asking a lot of pros this question. I'm curious what piece of advice you would give them, the difference between playing a 40 or 50 man tournament and a 2, 3, 400 man tournament.
Well, with 400 people, you know, you've got to go through a lot of minefields. I've always said you can lose a tournament early, but you can't win it early.
Mm-hmm.
Words of wisdom.
So, you know, you don't want to get in a race for all your chips in the first level. You know, you try to avoid that. You know, sometimes you got to give up a hand where you might even feel you have the best of it, but if you're not sure, you know, a lot of people, you know, by about the fifth level, half the field's eliminated themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then you play poker. The Ennies kick in, and I think, you know, they've always said, I never played with him, but even Stu Younger never really got active until the Annie's kicked in.
Yeah.
And then he went crazy.
Yeah, it's amazing. I still am shocked. You will sit down, you'll be dealing, you'll be in the third or fourth hand, and over your shoulder you hear somebody go all in a call.
Yeah.
And you're going, wait a minute, this is our third hand.
The
of this
blinds are 25-25, yeah,
right,
25-50.
Yeah, you're starting with some 8 or 10,000 in chips, and it's all sudden like,
and they'll table ace 7, ace 4 with an ace on the board.
One of the tables I played at the other day, a friend of mine came over and said, how's this table? I said, it's an any ace table. I said, watch. If there's an ace on the board, two people in this hand will get a lot of money in. And they'll turn over ace 7, ace 4, ace 8. Any ace they have, they're playing it, and they're just hoping to flop an ace and get their money in.
Yep.
Right. But those people are why we play. If everybody... If everybody played as boring as me, it'd be a pretty boring game. There'd be no TV ratings.
Well, your boring game has paid off big time. Congratulations on your success. I know you've blanked off so far in the first four events here, but I know you're going to play a bunch more in the next few days. And I wish you luck in those right up to the point where we meet at the final table.
Well, thanks a lot, and congratulations for your final table.
Thank you very much.
Glad to see that.
Touring Circuit Pro Doug Carley joining us here at our radio show, which is called The Final Table, here on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And our podcast available on thechipleader.com. We'll be right back with Jennifer Harmon.
Tuesday is Poker Day on 590 The Fan, KFNS. So here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the final table, live from the poker room at Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel.
Which today is the center of the poker world because we've got a World Series of Poker circuit event going on. Lots and lots of people here, but a very special guest on the phone today as well.
Our guest today is Jennifer Harmon. She is the only woman to win two bracelets in open events at the WSOP. She won her first in the Deuce to Seven No Limit Low Ball event in 2000 and the 5K Limit Hold'em in 2002. She's cashed in 24 different WSOP events. She's made two final tables on the WPT, and she's a regular in the biggest cash game in the world in Bobby's Room at the Bellagio. On April 13th, she'll host their fourth annual charity poker tournament for the Nevada SPCA at the Venetian. And on May 8th, she'll host the Jennifer Harmon Throwdown at the Peppermill in Reno. Jennifer, welcome to the final table.
Hey, thanks. How is everybody?
We're great.
Fighting some allergies and colds in the Midwest, but that's only happens 12 months of the year, so no problem there.
Jennifer, what is a throwdown?
A throwdown, it's a charity. It's my charity event for the National Kidney Foundation, and basically all different casinos are bringing teams to play in the charity event. So if a team wins, you know, they get rewarded. So basically that's what it is. It's teams competing against each other. It's kind of fun. It's kind of a good concept, especially for a charity event. Brings a lot of excitement to everything.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. The other thing I want to ask you right off the top is the World Series of Poker Tournament of Champions, which unfortunately Dennis, since he didn't win a bracelet, is not eligible for. But since you've got a couple, you're eligible. And I checked the website this morning, and they've got the top 50 listed there, and you are among the top 50 vote getters. The public is choosing them. I'm not sure when the voting ends, but are you campaigning to get into that Tournament of Champions?
I'm actually begging.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll go on and vote for you. No doubt about that.
I actually went on Twitter and asked people to vote for me. Facebook asked people to vote for me. You know, it's a big deal. They're, you know, it's giving away $1 million, and I think it's, you know, it would be fun to play, and I would really like to get in. So, yeah, I guess I'm campaigning.
But you should be, and you should be one of the 50 that are in there. There's no doubt about that. There's a handful of women that have done extremely well, and you're right at the top of the list there on that. I tell you, one thing that impressed me, you were a co-author there with that Super System 2 with Doyle. That had to be quite the thing to be in with those guys and adding to that book. How did you get asked into it? I mean, I know you play with him in Bobby's room and that. And what did you think about? How do you decide what to write? I mean, somebody approached me, it'd be like, wow, what do I put down here to go with Doyle's book?
Well, I walked up to the game. It was actually at Binion's, and I was getting ready to take my seat, and Doyle said, you know, I want to ask you something. I said, yeah, go ahead. And he said, I want you to write a chapter for me in my new super system. And I said, wow.
Yeah.
I said, really? And I asked him what he wants me to write it on, and he says, it doesn't matter. You choose. So I chose Limit Hold'em because I feel that's the game at the time where I had the most experience.
Uh-huh.
And he said, yeah, that's fine. I'd love for you to do Limit Hold'em. And how I wrote it, you know, it's hard for me to write how I play. So it actually took me a while because I have to think of certain scenarios and how I would play them and then put it down on paper. And actually, you know, it wasn't that easy for me to write it. But I just, you know, I thought of past experiences in my head and thought about different situations, and I have put a ton of hours in a Limit Hold'em, so, you know, it took probably, I don't know, 3 or 4 months to write that chapter.
Wow.
Do you think you're better at Limit than No Limit?
I'm definitely better at Limit than No Limit, all Limit games. No Limit, I don't feel that I've had enough experience to, you know, get out there and say, you know, that I'm a great player at No Limit Hold'em. Mm-hmm. I just feel that in order to become really good or really, you know, or even great at a certain poker game, you have to put in a lot of table hours. And I haven't in No Limit Hold'em. So, you know, I feel that with No Limit Hold'em, my reading ability is a lot less than in Limit games. And that, you know, that gives me a basic idea, you know, what games I'm good at, what games I'm not.
Right. I love to hear this. Daniel was saying one time about how he's not up to snuff right now because he hasn't been playing regular in Bobby's room, and he would actually be the underdog playing with the group of guys there in the high-stakes poker, and then you're being very, you know, down-to-earth on this. You're one of the better players. There's no doubt about that. But the ability to realize your own limits and that maybe you need to touch up or play a little more in something, wow, that just speaks for what the pro you are.
And does that keep you out of more tournaments, Jen?
Well, my kids keep me out of tournaments, basically.
I love it.
You know, they're little. They're 3 years old, and I really don't want to miss a second with them because they're so much fun. And, you know, I know there'll come a time where my kids won't want to be around me, but while they want to be around me, I want to be around them. I just have so much fun with them that I feel poker and tournaments will always be around, and I can always, you know, travel to tournaments when they get a little older. But right now I'm enjoying myself hanging out with my kids.
Good for you. That's great to be grounded in that and to have that perspective on it. So since you do stay home, I know Vegas being your home, that means you spend a lot of nights at Bobby's room. You know, everybody's always curious about the big game, so we got to quiz you about a couple of things here. I'm curious about how the food is.
Whoa, where'd that come from?
We actually order out, you know, different restaurants at the Bellagio, so they bring the food in, and And that's where we eat. So we order from Prime, we order from Circo, we order from, actually somebody ordered from Le Cirque the other day.
Uh-huh.
The sushi restaurant we order from. Six, so, yeah, all of them.
Hey, Paul, I got to admit, if you're more interested in the food, Jennifer probably wants you at the table.
Well, Jennifer wants me at the table. Jennifer wants a lot of people at the table. Yeah. How often does somebody who's an outsider actually come and sit down in the game, Jen?
You know, not very often. Once in a while, you'll probably get it maybe two or three times a year. It used to be more,
but
now it's not very often. But usually, you know, somebody will come in who's not really good at all the games and is trying to learn them, and they're actually really good at one game, and they'll come down and come in and sit down at the game, and
Oh, wow.
You know, they're lesser of a player until they start, you know, getting better, and then they're no longer considered a draw to the game.
If somebody came in there and said, "Look, I really am only good at one game. Can I play that with you?" Would the group say okay, or would you insist on having a mixed game format?
I mean, if it's somebody we know that's, you know, that's really good at that game, then no, he doesn't get his way.
But a whale comes and sits down and says, "I'm a multimillionaire. I don't play a lot of poker, but I just want to see if I could play with you guys." Anything he wants, right?
Of course. Of course. And that's happened before. I mean, people have come in who said they only want to play No Limit Hold'em, and we've changed the game to No Limit Hold'em.
But what do you normally play? What's in the mix there?
Lately, we actually, you know, the game has been pretty scarce lately, but lately, or a couple weeks ago, we played for about 10 days, and we had, I think we had 12 games in the mix, maybe more.
Wow. I'd heard 8 and 10 out there, but 12 or more?
Yeah, I think, you know, we had the No Limit Hold'em in, the PLO in, and the Deuce to Seven No Limit, and then we had almost every limit game available. We had Deuce to Seven Raz, we had Badoogie. We had regular Raz, high low regular, the horse games, triple draws. We had a lot of games in there.
Wow, everything but Chinese.
Yeah, no, Chinese was in there too.
Oh no!
If it was five handed or less, Chinese got played. If it was more than five players, then Chinese got thrown out.
Do all of the players, yourself included, have one of those games that you're great at compared to the other ones, and maybe one game that you think, "Oh no, this round I hate this game. I'm not playing a lot of hands on this game." Can you do that?
You know, I guess there's bathroom breaks. But you know,
might be a little conspicuous after a while.
If you miss the same game twice, I think, you know, people in the game start. Teasing you.
Yeah.
And they make you feel bad, so they make you have to sit down and play that game. But when you played mixed games for so long, it's really hard to say that anybody's really, really good at one game. You just know which games you're not that good at. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So those are the games you really need to focus on and work hard at getting better at, are the games you're not very good at.
Is there anybody that you've played with before that you'd love to have back there, like an Andy Beal or somebody like that, maybe, that you'd love to see come back in there and play, that it was excitement and all that jazz?
I mean,
Andy, for sure there was excitement. You know, I'd love to see him back. I mean, it was just, the whole thing was really exciting.
Yeah. For our listeners who don't know the story, Andy Beal is a billionaire Texas banker who went to Las Vegas to play against the best of the best, Jen Harmon and Doyle Brunson, Todd Brunson, Barry Greenstein. The list was about a dozen players long. Howard Lederer was in there. And he wanted to play you guys heads up in limit poker. And I think it was limit hold'em predominantly. And you guys had a few sessions against him. And he wanted to play so high that it kind of made you guys nervous. Wasn't that his concept?
It was his concept. To make us, you know, very uncomfortable at the table. So we couldn't really play, you know, poker to you know, at our best, which is a good point, because when you play with scared money, you can't win.
Mm-hmm. So he wanted to do to you what you guys do to other people at times.
Right. So he, you know, it was a good idea on his part. But you know, when Andy first came in, he was very new to poker. So you know, it didn't matter what levels we played. You know, it wasn't really that intimidating, but he got better and better and better. Andy's a very, very brilliant man, very intelligent, very smart, knows what he wants, gets it done. He's And he got so much better by playing us, you know, unbelievably better. So towards the end, it actually got a lot. It got a lot harder for us to beat him. And there were a couple times that he actually beat us.
What limits did he push you to?
1 in 200,000.
Oh, my gosh.
one in 200,000 limit. You know,
I don't care.
I say that because we have listeners who only play no limit and think to themselves, okay. You know, that would be, nobody has
phenomenal.
A bankroll to
yeah.
play 100 okay. and 200,000 no limit, but even 100, 200,000 limit is tremendously high. Were you nervous at those levels, Jen?
How could you not be?
Maybe for the first 5 minutes, you're a little nervous. I mean, you just, you know. You feel like you need to call on the end, but wow, it's $200,000. Maybe yeah. he has you, but you know, maybe he's bluffing and you have ace high. You know, and that's a lot of money. Throw $200,000 into the pot on one card. But I'll give you, you know, an example how big that game was. Is you could win and lose $6 million. So that's a $12 million swing in 30 minutes.
Yeah,
that's how big that game is. Playing heads up.
Yeah, that's a sizable game.
Yeah. When is Andy coming back? Have there been discussions?
I don't think Andy, he came back in January, this January, and called me at 12:30 in the morning and wanted to play poker.
And
he said, I know you can get a game, let's get a game. But it wasn't that easy because a lot of people are out of town these days. And I tried to call around, nobody would answer their phone. They were either sleeping or gone. And I ended up getting a game, but it was me, Eli, Lezra, and Andy. And we played smaller levels. We played 2 and 4,000. And we played around 9 hours. But, you know, somebody asked him if he's thinking about coming back, and he said he was just way too busy right now to even think about the thought of coming back. So, we'll see.
Does he only play limit hold'em?
He does. He only plays limit hold'em for now. He said, you know, that he's been playing a little bit of Pot Limit Omaha that he likes.
Oh, my gosh. Him and Pot Limit?
Oh,
that could be scary.
We could get some big games. I might have to be out. I might not be able to afford PLO at 1 in 200,000.
Yeah, no kidding.
During one of the sessions a few years ago, you played when you were very, very sick with your kidney problem, right?
I did. That's when I played the 1 in 200,000 game.
Yeah. How sick were you?
Very sick. I was pretty close to kidney failure, and I actually also that I had the flu that weekend. So I was, you know, between kidney failure and the flu, and my blood pressure was running about at times 240 over 140. Like skyrocketed. And I was a pretty sick cookie, and my transplant was a week away.
Yeah,
so that's how, you know, if you think about it, that's how sick I was.
How can you concentrate at the table in those physical conditions?
It wasn't easy. And, you know, thank God I only played for like 45 minutes. Because he actually was, he had a plane to catch. So I only had to play him for 45 minutes. But playing him for 45 minutes in that condition I was in, when I got up from the table, I almost collapsed.
Wow. You've got some amazing stories here and everything like that, experiences, I mean, with Andy Beal, the rest of it. When are you going to sit down and actually write a book about that? Not necessarily about poker. I want to hear the more about Jennifer.
I'm thinking about it. I might be, you know, I might be close. I'm thinking about it, but, you know, I just feel like I'm a poker player.
Well, yeah, I know you are, but you have so many other life experiences here wrapped around poker.
That's true.
You know, nobody else has ever experienced. Being able to sit in that Bobby's room with that caliber of guys, with your relationship you had with like Chip Reese and Andy Beal, and my gosh, it's just it's amazing. I'd love to read it.
Me too.
So,
well, I'll think about it. It might be in the workings. Yeah, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. Since Dennis mentioned Chip Reese, tell us a little bit about him.
Chip was, you know, he was the best player in the world when he was playing. He was amazing. I never saw Chip's A game go to a B, a C, a D, or an F. He was so emotionally stable to play poker. You know, I've never seen anybody have the same characteristics that he does when it comes to not showing any emotion and not letting poker affect you. I think the worst his game ever got was an A-. He was amazing at all the games. He was just a great player, and he had a great attitude with poker and a great mind for poker and also for backgammon, for gin, you know, not just poker.
Why would you want to play poker with somebody that good?
Well, it's a great learning experience, that's for sure.
Yeah, well.
You know, he was, you know, I wouldn't sit down and play Chip Reese heads up, that's for sure. But, you know, it's not only him in the game. Mm-hmm. There's other players in the game, too.
Is there anybody else other than Chip that you wouldn't want to play heads up?
Many. Phil
okay.
Ivey,
okay.
David Benjamin, David Oppenheim, mm-hmm. well, Daniel, of course, because, you know, we're too good of friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Patrick Antonius, mm-hmm. Beth Hansen. There's many.
That's a nice list.
That's a heck of a list.
Yeah, no kidding.
Jen, it's been a couple of years since you appeared on High Stakes Poker. Are you planning on going back anytime soon?
I think so. Last year, the game was pretty tough. Pretty tough lineup. And I don't think anybody knows this about me, but the only time I've ever played No Limit Cash that's not been part of the mix in Bobby's room is on High Stakes Poker.
Really?
So that's about all the experience I've had at playing cash games. No Limit Cash games is the hours I put in High Stakes Poker.
Wow.
I did not know that.
Do you watch the show?
I do. You know, you can learn a lot by watching.
Yeah. Do you think that the lineup on there has gotten too tough? Dennis just had an experience. You know, he's been on there the last 3 weeks, and he had the wonderful experience of not only looking across at Mr. Ivy, but on his left to Mr. Dwan, and at the other end was Mr. Antonius, and on and on and on.
And Daniel and Barry, but we won't name any others. I
had
the easy lineup.
What were you doing in that game?
Sweating.
I wouldn't be in that game.
I was sweating is what I was doing in that game.
Yeah, that's a tough lineup, and, you know, that's one of the reasons, you know, I chose not to play because – yeah, it's pretty big stakes, and you could, you know, lose a lot of money playing those games, especially against people that are way more superior at No Limit Hold'em than you are.
Yeah. Well, Jen, we could go on and on talking with you, but we're running out of time here. We'll have to do it again sometime, again, maybe this summer when we're all out there for the World Series of Poker. We can sit down and talk more about your amazing life and all the poker that you're involved in. Let's get the plugs in now for a big charity poker event Jennifer's doing next week at the Venetian. It'll be on Tuesday, April 13th. It benefits the Nevada SPCA. I know you've been involved in this cause for several years. This is the fourth year you've done it. Why are they so important to you?
Well, I love animals, and I love what the NSPCA does. Every single one of them have a huge heart down there, and I feel that you know, they need a lot of money and for veterinary bills, for saving other animals, and it's just a great cause. Animals love unconditionally, and I've always been an animal lover, and it's so true to my heart.
Well, if you're in the Las Vegas area or you'll be nearby on Tuesday the 13th, you can play in this thing for $330, and the winner is going to get a seat in the main event this summer. And then Jennifer's also doing her throwdown at the Peppermill Reno on May 8th. You can find out more about all of these events on her website, jenniferharmon.com. And by the way, go to WSOP.com and vote for her to get into the Tournament of Champions. She's one of the top 50. You got to be one of the top 20 vote-getters to get in there. And you are certainly deserving of being in there.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, you got my vote, Jennifer.
Thank you, Dennis. I appreciate it.
Really
All
a
right.
pleasure.
Really, do.
Really a pleasure having you at the final table. We look forward to doing it again with you sometime soon.
Yeah, anytime.
All right,
give
take
me a
care.
Call. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks,
bye-bye.
Jen.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Jennifer Harmon here on the final table on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. That's all the time we have for this week. A quick reminder to visit the Poker Players Alliance online, thepppa.org, the Poker Players Alliance, the group that fights for poker players like you and me and Dennis and Jennifer and Doug and poker players all across the United States to keep our game legal and regulated everywhere it should be so home games don't get busted up, so states don't discriminate against online players. Every poker player should be a member of the Poker Players Alliance, thepppa.org. Next week, we're back with more coverage of the World Series of Poker Circuit event here at Harrah's St. Louis. You can find out about all the tournaments that are going on over the course of the next week leading up to the big one by going to their website, harrahsstlouis.com. And next week we'll also be joined by Bernard Lee, another circuit pro, a guy who's got himself an endorsement deal with another casino. Is he even allowed in this casino? We'll find out next week when the Final Table returns to Harrah's St. Louis, Tuesday at 2 on 5 Night of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com. And anytime on demand, our podcasts are on thechipleader.com.